Lights. Camera. Action. Now, where's the mullet? Where is he? Is he coming in by chopper again?
And now, live from Quinlan's Cantina in the Gold Coast of Australia, it's time again for your dose of action cinema history from the 80s, 90s, and beyond with the Lethal Mullet Podcast. Oh, g'day, mate. How you going?
G'day, folks. How you going? Welcome to, of course, the Lethal Mullet here on Quinlan's Cantina, the Gold Coast of Australia. Here for episode number 211. Well, in layman's terms, that's 211. Yes, 211 shows we've done, folks. Well, we've done 210. This is the 211. And, of course, this will be celebrating the second greatest film ever made, although I'm just about to eat my own words because I do believe I did say this was the best, but might have competition. That is, of course, Mad Max Fury Road, the reboot slash sequel slash reinvention of the Mad Max genre, directed by, of course, the one, the only George Miller. No, not the man that did The Man from Snowy River, the other George Miller. Yes, there is two out here in Australia. Of course, you're welcome here on, of course, the Lethal Mullet Network. And joining me today for this occasion is a dear pal all the way, of course, from the United States of A. That's not Australia, but, of course, America is the one, the only, Carl Wagner. Buddy, how are you?
I am doing well. I'm just going to do it right now. I got to call you out. Before we went on live, Adam told me that Mad Max Fury Road was the greatest film of all time. For you long-time listeners of the Lethal Mullet, you know Adam is committing sacrilege to himself because he is speaking ill of Dune.
Yeah. Look, I want to say Dune is first place. This is second place. There you go.
Until Dune Part 2 comes out, right?
Well, this is true, and we get to see those massive sandworms crushing the Arakeen frontier against, of course, the Harkonnen.
Well, that's true. Now, zoom me out here, Adam, because there's something important I need to zoom. Stick. There we go. I just want to say we already have a guest star with us because Fury Kitten is here. One half of the Fandom Podcast Network mascot, Stripesy, is in the house joining us in his own unique way, but he is the Fury Kitten. So we just had to get that in. I had to get that in.
And no doubt, folks, you knew that we would eventually do Fury Road here, as yes, it is one of my favorite films. And what a film with 10 Oscar nominations, 6 Oscar wins. It smashed competition that year. Films like, of course, one of the big ones, The Force Awakens, got swept under the carpet when this bad boy came around, and just for 6 months just hit all over the place. Even the 3D version was kicking the tail out of anything that came around it.
This is true. It came coming out. God, it's hard to believe this movie is almost 8 years old now.
Yeah. It's hard to think of, isn't it?
Well, I mean, it feels like it wasn't that long ago. I mean, I guess it's just because time has flown so much, but it's just, yeah, it's quite interesting. And yeah, I mean, it definitely got the Oscar support. And I think it's one of those films nobody really expected to be what it was. No, it's Mad Max. It's, you know, people were thinking The Road Warrior, people were going back to Beyond Thunderdome. Say what you will about either of those films, they just weren't anywhere ending up being the level that this was. I mean, this is one of the most beautifully shot films I've ever seen. I'll definitely give it that. And Charlize Theron puts in a phenomenal performance as Furiosa in this film.
G'day, mate. How you going? Welcome to the Lethal Mullet Network, where you'll find all these amazing shows and more. Where you'll find the Lethal Mullet Podcast, a celebration of action cinema from the 80s, 90s, and beyond. You'll also find Making Treks, a Star Trek fan podcast, where I'm joined by my amazing co-host, Mark Newbold, into a deep dive of Star Trek. You'll also find Mullet and Kilt, a look at music, where I'm joined by my dear pal, Darth Elvis, and where you can also find the Mullet Guild, a look at the Dune universe. all here on, of course, lethalmulletnetwork.podbean.com or on your favorite podcatcher. You can find us there. You can also find all these shows a week later on, of course, the one, the only Phantom Podcast Network, FPN, on fpnet.podbean.com. Don't forget to also follow us on socials. There's, of course, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at the handle at the Lethal Mullet. We'll catch you out there and enjoy your action cinema. Imperator Furiosa went through, and of course, that's going to be a film all itself. But this one was shot here in Australia. So this new one is actually done not too far from where they did, of course, Rogue Warrior, which is near the middle west, you could say, of New South Wales. And it's pure red sand, folks. That classic Rogue Warrior look and feel. So we'll get into that too. But before we get into anything too much, we're going to let you know where you can catch this show and many others like it on this network. That is, of course, following the yellow ticker you see below you on the screen. Subscribe to the show at, of course, www.lethalmulletnetwork.podbean.com. And also follow us on the socials at The Lethal Mullet. Of course, that's on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And slowly, progressively, we're getting into all the other forms like TikTok, Hive, all those others. Eventually, you'll be able to see us all over the place there too.
The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy has many a thing to say about deep thought. And Deep Thought itself has many a thing to say about the guide, who are going to give you a guide through the maelstrom and enormity of the guide itself. Hosted by two unexpected travelers, the Lethal Mullet, all the way from Quinlan's Cantina in the Milky Way, and of course, Dan the Man from Birmingham. All on the other side of the water, they have hitched a ride and come to Ursa Minor. Tell you all about the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, which you can find whenever you find good podcasts.
That's right, folks. Check out the brand new show, Deep Thought Life, Douglas Adams and Everything, monthly on, of course, the Lethal Mullet Network at lethalmulletnetwork.podbean.com or on the socials at The Lethal Mullet. You can also check it out on YouTube very soon on the Spacebook Network, hosted by the one and the only co-host here, Dan the Man from Birmingham, Dan Hadley. All here. And don't panic, we'll be back.
Now, Kyle, I do believe we're over on FPN as well.
Yeah, I think you got your start over at, with the mullet over at the Phantom Podcast Network, and we branched you off into your own channel now. So you are working at growing it and making it even a bigger and better thing. Of course, you can find the actual episodes of the podcast for the Lethal Mullet on the Phantom Podcast Network Master Feed. But I highly suggest you subscribe to the channel because there's so many exclusive things to the Lethal Mullet channel that you cannot find on the Phantom Podcast Network. So subscribe to the Lethal Mullet channel where you can find some original stuff like Making Treks. There's a certain Dune show with a guy who knows something about some pieces of junk on the Phantom Podcast Network. You know,
Scotty Byman.
Mullet and Kilt. And you never know what else is going to pop up on the Lethal Mullet
Network. Deep Thought.
Yeah, well, Deep Thought. Are they really deep? I mean, it's you and Dan Hadley. Can they really get that deep?
It talks a lot. It talks a lot, put it that way.
Yeah. But no, definitely subscribe to the Lethal Mullet. You know, if you're still not sure, get your appetizer on the Phantom Podcast Network. You're going to realize you got a lot of fun at this podcast as it covers all kinds of stuff from 80s action to modern hits. And also, you know, like I said, there's so much great original exclusive content to the Lethal Mullet channel. Subscribe, like it, check out this YouTube channel thing that he's eventually going to be doing too, because that's coming. I'm pushing him, ladies and gentlemen. I'm prodding him with the big stick.
It's a big stick, apparently.
Yeah, it's a very big stick.
Yeah, he hit me so hard I'm feeling it in the ribs.
Well, you're not the nunchaku, man. The nunchaku.
And with that, folks, we're going to move into, of course, the news now.
And now it's time for the news here on the Lethal Mullet Podcast.
As we've mentioned on a couple of the other episodes, we are looking at the following Devil. That is, of course, the latest here on the channel. First one is, of course, Highlander, which the last episode number 210, just went out. And that looked at a live episode looking at, of course, the Highlander first season on the TV series. Now, our dear pal over there, of course, on Blood of Kings, Kevin the Raider Nerd, right, so, as always, said, you know, man, you should go and check out the TV show. The TV show is definitely where the Highlander series excels. And, you know, I've tried a few times to get into it, and you've got to be in a certain mood sometimes for a TV show to really get there. And I had a little bit of downtime over the holidays, and I thought, what the hell, let's really get into it this time. And so I did, and I'm now up to season three. I'm about halfway through season three. So what I've done now is every time I finish a season, you're going to be seeing a special live episode, which will turn into one of the podcast ones as well, looking at my thoughts on the series of that season. And, of course, looking at the top 10 episodes of the season, full critical analysis of what I think is great, sword fighting, you name it on there. And we're also going to have an episode a little bit down the track with Andy Sloan, or should say Sensei Andy Sloan, fellow karateka, and also somebody that knows everything when it comes to the locations, particularly of Sea Cove in Vancouver, Canada. So that's coming up, folks. So if you must, you will see that episode. Let's let you see what that one just looks like right now for you. That is, of course, this bad boy you will see around the place, Highlander Season 1 Rewatch. So stay tuned for that. Of course, obviously, it's exclusive to this channel here. Also, coming up very soon is, oh, look, it's Mark Newbold. Hello, mate, how you doing? How's Brummy? And a cup of tea for us, yeah? So one of the great things about this, of course, making tricks, we have the look at, of course, a deep dive into the Star Trek universe, and we're always looking for ways to, of course, boost that as best we can and really get a sense of where to go forward. It's huge, isn't it?
Well, it's the Trek universe is probably at one of its peaks right now. When you look at the fact that we've got, let's see here, we've got 1, 2, 3 live action shows. You've got Discovery, Picard, Strange New Worlds, two great animated shows in Lower Decks, and Star Trek Prodigy, which is highly underrated. If you've not watched Star Trek Prodigy, you need to check it out. It's actually a great new type of storytelling within the Star Trek universe. And Kate Mulgrew returning to voice Janeway in that series is a tour de force, and it is absolutely spectacular in that. We just actually finished up our season covering Star Trek Prodigy on the Union Federation podcast on the Fandom Podcast Network. But yeah, there is so much going on in Trek right now. It's outside of, I'm going to say outside of Marvel, and because I think it's putting out just as much content as Star Wars right now. And I think it's a very interesting time for Trek. I know there's some movie talk coming back into the picture, as well as some other projects that Alex Kurtzman, who's kind of running everything Trek right now, has going on. So very interesting times for Trek.
It is. I mean, it's not something we expected to, you know, for it to be such a huge thing on TV again, is it?
I'm not surprised in the days of now that we're in the world of streaming and everybody looking to get content out there. Everybody's diving into any IP they own to add to their streaming service. And I'm going to say, for my money, as far as live action television goes, you don't get better than Strange New Worlds as far as science fiction. Anson Mount as Captain Pike in that show, and just in a phenomenal cast from top to bottom. It's probably one of some of my favorite Star Trek in a very long time.
Oh, without a doubt. I think it's going to be huge. Now, folks, we also have, of course, the return of this one. Of course, the Dune podcast, as we mentioned. Look, Scotty Bowman with a lovely little cap there, Scotty, a dear friend. And, of course, that is going to be looking at the new TV show. And, of course, we will look at the film that's coming, which is, of course, the second Dune movie, Dune Part 2. I mean, you're pretty keen for this, aren't you, Cole?
Oh, yeah, I'm very excited. I have to admit that I had high hopes for Dune Part 1, and I think it exceeded them. What I found so interesting was the aspect of, even when Dune Part 1 came out, Dune Part 2 wasn't fully greenlit yet. So that made it very interesting. Right. It really took that first weekend of success for Dune Part 2 to get greenlit. And, of course, they also have the HBO Max streaming service working on the Sisterhood series, if that continues, because it seems like every day Warner Brothers is canceling some project they have going on. It's a mess over there. But I'll be curious, too, because I know Denny has talked about depending on how Dune 2 does, doing a third Dune film to kind of finish off a certain character story arc. So it'll be interesting to see, but Dune was very impressive. I've always felt it was one of the hardest novels to bring to the big screen. And, you know, we go back to the 80s version. It has its following, and considering that when they did it, it wasn't that bad. I've always been a fan of the Sci-Fi Channel miniseries that they did way back in the early 90s. I thought that was actually very well done, all things considered. Though I will say this, the CGI at this point in time is a little rough because that was very early on in the CGI time. But yeah, no, this Dune had a phenomenal cast. I think Oscar Isaac is Leto Atreides was phenomenal, and obviously Jason Momoa is just so charismatic. He stole every scene he was in. And Timothy Chalamet surprised me as Paul Atreides. He was much better than I was expecting.
Oh, 100%. And folks, we also covered, as you know, Snake Eater, and more recently we've looked at Bounty Tracker, which has just gone out. And, of course, Snake Eater is an interesting one because, it's the start of rise of Lorenzo Lamas as a action star, and obviously being in Falcon Crest and was it Dynasty and stuff like that, you know, being basically the heartthrob, the romantic lead, and then moved into being, you know, a legit action star. And he's actually a martial artist, folks. Look, let's put it down. He's one of the more respected ones in Hollywood. A lot of people don't know that. He's probably more known for his TV. So obviously we've got that. We've got a show looking at Renegade coming out just after this, looking at the TV show, which, of course, made him famous as an action star, along with, of course, Branscombe and Richmond. Now, we've also got, just after that, oh, would you look at this, Ninja Heaven. That's right. Some that you probably haven't seen or not know of. Now, the first one is, of course, Ninja 3, The Domination, that we were going to be looking at. And, of course, that is one of the greats, of course, of the canon line, just after they did, of course, the break-in film. So looking at, obviously, dance music and stuff like that too, and dancing, street dancing in particular. And that sort of came into this as well, as the lead character is actually, you know, that exactly that, a dancer. Shokosugi does fit into that, but it's a very exorcist mixed sort of thing. It's an interesting movie nonetheless. There's a new Blu-ray of that too, which has commentaries and stuff. We will talk about that on that episode. More Shokosugi for you. You've got Rage of Honor, which is one I hadn't seen in the 80s, folks. So I only saw that until recently. So we're going to be looking at that one, why it is his James Bond movie. And to be honest, thanks to Kevin's idea, we're going to be looking at Ninja 1 and Ninja 2, which is actually Scott Adkins' ninja films. Now, those ones in particular are great because Kane Kasugi comes back to play a ninja in that one. Have you seen any of those, Kyle?
It's been a very, very long time since I've seen those. I mean, we're talking about video store shelves in the 80s kind of thing, where it's like, yeah, that's the last time I remember seeing those, or late night cable TV or something like that. But I have two things for you here. First of all, if you're going to do ninjas, where are the surf ninjas?
Well, the Beverly Hills ones.
The other thing is, I actually have a challenge for you, Mr. Mullet. Speaking of martial arts and your love of all things martial arts, are you familiar with the show? It's actually did its first two seasons here in the U.S. on Cinemax, and a third season is now coming out on HBO Max, the show Warrior.
Yes, I have, and I have the first season on DVD.
Andrew Koji is quickly becoming one of my favorite actors. He is phenomenal. He was great. Also in the – he plays Storm Shadow in the recent G.I. Joe Snake Eyes movie. Well, not the greatest movie. His performance was actually very good in it. But season 3, which is filming now and will be out later this year on HBO Max here in the States, they've added the one and only Mark Dacascos to the cast.
Oh, yes. Yep.
And I am very excited about this. I love this show. A show that was actually created by Bruce Lee back in the day based off of a project he's worked on that they've been trying for years to get developed. And excellent martial arts, excellent storyline. If you have not checked out Warrior, check it out. And I am calling it right now. You need to cover Warrior on the Lethal Mullet.
Well, that just means you need to come on and chat about it too.
Well, it depends on when you're going to do it, because I'm about to go into Planet Moondoggy soon. So
we'll have to drag you out of Moondoggy for one night just for that, my friend.
So, but no, for those of you watching or listening, check out Warrior. Actually, one of my favorite shows of the last 5 years. It's phenomenal.
It really is. There's some great martial arts. And again, you know, it goes back to, you know, the whole idea of even the Kung Fu series, which kind of was, I don't know the whole story, but it was ripped out of Bruce's hands to a certain extent. And Warrior was very intended.
Yeah, it very much was ripped out of his hands. David Carradine kind of was like, or Carradine was very much like, yeah, I'm just going to take this.
I mean, then there was also obviously Kung Fu, The Legend Continues or something like that.
When, and then now they have there's a new version of it with a female lead out right now. So, yeah. I know. It's a CW show. I don't know what to say.
And with that, folks, we're going to head into the pub. That is, of course, we're going to be looking at Mad Max Fury Road. Now, I mean, this is a film that's been on the cards back in the part, well, development hell stages back in 1987, when, of course, George wanted to pump out another Mad Max movie that wasn't like Beyond Thunderdome, which was very mediocre by most people's perceptions, you know.
Mediocre is putting it nicely. Outside of a phenomenal Tina Turner song that was used as part of the soundtrack, Beyond Thunderdome was just a strange story, and it was sleep-inducing. That storyline was so slow-moving in Beyond Thunderdome. I mean, for me, The Road Warrior, if you're going to talk the original three films, The Road Warrior by far and away is the best of the bunch. I think the original Mad Max kind of, at least for people in the States, suffers from being a little too Australian.
This cast, you know,
and
I am the Knight Rider.
Yeah, and then I think Beyond Thunderdome, they tried to make it this. I just don't know what they were thinking, and it was a strange movie. It really was.
So, you know, I mean, I think the thing is, you know, it definitely set up what was, you know, going to be, you know, obviously the crux of the thing. Now, let's get back to one thing first before we get too fast. The theme goes back to something that's said at the start of Mad Max, and this says it for both the police and for the bad guys. I am the Knight Rider. I'm the chosen one, the mighty hand of vengeance, sent down to strike the unroadworthy. I'm hotter than a rolling dice. Step right up, chum, and watch the kid lay down a rubber road. Right to freedom. And that is, of course, Knight Rider's words at the start of the original Mad Max. Now, he's stolen a Pursuit Special, which is a Kingswood, which I do believe is a GTO from the States, with a huge bonnet display in it. It's, you know, it's got a rocket on it as well. And then it's chased by three Ford cars. That's, of course, the 500 series Falcon out here in Australia, big V8s, main force patrol cars. Now, that whole sequence is just, for its time, and still to this day, the energy of it, particularly because of Knight Rider, sets up just what this whole universe is about.
Well, so first of all, I just want to address, there's no wonder that this universe has gas shortage problems when they're all driving vehicles like that.
You know, the thing is, with Mad Max in particular, you know, what is Mad Max is the first thing we should probably ask. So Mad Max is a post-apocalyptic universe which is set in the very near future. So not too far from removed from now. There's been wars. Even in Road Warrior and in Mad Max Fury Road, they don't really talk about too much what's really happened. Even in Mad Max itself, civilization's kind of still there, but it's still on the verge of going. And so they're not saying whether it's war or this or that that's fallen apart. It's not until Mad Max 2 and 3 that you really see the roads have completely being disillusioned from, of course, civilization itself. And, of course, in that we have these characters like Max. Max is basically a Ronin, a masterless samurai in this verse, or, you know, one of those gunslingers that's, you know, out in the middle of nowhere, like Shane or like any of those ones that comes in, basically has a little adventure, then walks back out, which is pretty much what Road Warrior is. And even Fury Road. So this is part Western, part samurai film.
in some ways, but in this universe, which is, you know, just left. It's the world that's been left behind.
Well, I think there's something very interesting, too, with the Mad Max films, because you have your main character, Max, mm-hmm. but he's not necessarily the focus of these films. I think it's even in Fury Road, and I will talk about that a little bit more, but these movies are more about Max, but the real story is the world around Max.
Yes.
I mean, Max is kind of our eyes to this world, but these movies aren't about Max. They're about the world and how he just ends up in these situations. And I think it even applies with Fury Road. And I'm going to throw this out there because I think there's been a show recently that's been talked about quite a bit that has a similar style as far as where your main character necessarily isn't the focus of your story. And it's about what's going on around him. And that's the Andor series.
Mm.
Where I think, you know, obviously Cassian Andor is your main character, but really the interesting things and the stuff that everybody's paying attention to is what's going on around Andor. And I think that really, Tony Gilroy, who writes Andor, kind of pulled some stuff from Mad Max as far as that kind of feel of surrounding your character. You don't agree with me, sir?
No, I agree with you. You did the one thing you know you shouldn't have done, Kyle.
What's that?
One thing. You didn't say it right.
Oh, well, you know, I know better. I know better than to try to even imitate the legend of Stellan Skarsgård.
My Arrakis, my planet, my dune.
Yes, no, I do not tread. I have a rule about treading on legendary accents, and Stellan is up there at this point.
Or even like De Niro says in Ronin to him, yeah, pretty good, are you? Yeah, nice reflexes. They die hard.
Mm, there you go.
Stellan, so I'd like to see him in this universe. Mad Max, Stellan Skarsgård. Bring it on.
We'll talk about it a little later. I'm very curious about what the future of this Mad Max universe is, because I think it's very much up in the air.
Well, with that, let's have a quick look at the the film that should be the first film in this new series. That is, of course, Furiosa. So, folks, yes, we have a prequel coming, which is out not too long away. It's coming out in 2024, 24th of May, which is actually just roughly about the same date that Fury Road came out. So it's an Australian post-apocalyptic action adventure film directed and written by, of course, the legendary man himself, George Miller, starring Anya Taylor-Joy as Furiosa, a younger Imperator Furiosa. It's a spin-off, but it's also a prequel, folks. So, yes, Mad Max himself is not in this because probably he'll be too young to be where he is, or he'll just be a police officer at this stage, I guess. So this is the first in that. Now, Junkie XL's coming back to do the music as well. If you're anyone like myself, I loved the work that he did on the previous film. So the premise is, as the world falls, Furiosa, a very young Furiosa, is snatched away from the green place of many mothers and then falls into the hands of Warlord Dementus and his biker hordes. So it's going to be a little bit like the first Mad Max film, folks. You're going to see big bikes in this one too. So it's going to be like the Quackers and stuff that were done with Toe Cutter. Sweeping through the wasteland, they come across, of course, the Citadel that we know from Fury Road, where we see, of course, a warlord by the name of Immortan Joe. The two tyrants then battle it out for the Citadel, and only one, we know who it is going to make it through. Furiosa must survive, of course, the carnage in between, and, of course, many of the trials. We've got Anya Taylor-Joy playing Furiosa, Chris Hemsworth playing Warlord Dementus, which is the main villain of the film. Tom Burke is rumoured to be playing the younger version of Immortan Joe, which is Colonel John Moore, I think they're calling him, or something like that. It's not going to be Immortan. You're going to find how he became that too. But with that too, Nathan Jones is back as Rictus Erectus, and Angus Sampson, the Australians will know, of course, from ABC's Recovery show, is back as the organic mechanic. And, so this is definitely going to be huge. I mean, we've seen some of the cars and some of the bikes on TV, and or some of the you only have to Google it, folks. You can see, just like Fury Road, you can't hide those sets. They're huge. But everything's real. And it looks like they're going to be doing some massive stunts in this one too.
I'm excited for this film, but I'm pardon the pun, but I am pumping the brakes just a little bit on this film. And let me explain. Mm-hmm. First of all, I love Anya Taylor-Joy. I think she's phenomenal. If you haven't, she's done a lot of great stuff. Obviously, The Queen's Gambit, she became very famous for. Mm-hmm. But one of my favorite roles of her is actually her playing the character, the new mutant, Ileana Rasputin, in the New Mutants film. She was absolutely perfect casting mm-hmm. for that character and played that character so well. I know a lot of people bash that movie, but her performance in it as that character was spot on. Of course, she's also known for being in the M. Night Shyamalan film, Split, and the one that was the continuation of it, which had Glass. So she's done a lot. She's most recently been in The Menu, which is getting a lot of hype. But Adam, the reason why I'm saying I'm pumping the brakes just slightly, I have all the faith in George Miller, and the cast is outstanding. But when you are taking a character who was given such a legendary performance by Charlize Theron and replacing that, no matter how good this young actress is, and like I said, I'm a huge fan of hers. You know, we've seen this before, my friend, and other things. You're taking a pretty big risk, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I really reckon he should have just done it pretty much straight away after, obviously, what he had done with Fury Road, you know, because we know how long it takes to get these ones into production. The massive, it's such a huge gamut.
Well, and you're also talking, too, with the aspect of a lot of these kind of films being delayed because of COVID before they could start production. And now that we're just now starting to really get out of the COVID rules, I think 2023 is the year we go back to the theaters, because I think we'll see an influx of films because of things being able to be finished up and things that had still been on hold from COVID, like Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning Part One. But I think we're going to see that. But in this case, it's been, by the time this comes out, it'll be close to 9 years since Fury Road came out. So
that's right.
It's going to be interesting to see how this gets marketed, how they play it up. And if people are feeling like, can they recapture that magic? Because that's the thing with Fury Road. Fury Road is so unique and just one of those movies that just hits on every note. And sometimes it's hard to recapture that magic again. It's very rare. I hope he's taken some Jim Cameron's lessons. That's all I'm going to say. Because Jim can take 20 years off of a franchise, come back, and still have it be one of the highest grossing films of all time.
Yeah, somehow it worked, didn't it? All right, folks, let's tell you about, of course, the original film. So we're going to be talking about, of course, Fury Road. So what's it all about? What's this film? Well, it's pretty much like The Hobbit, as a dear friend of ours had said many, many years ago, because it's there and back again. So the world is now a desert wasteland, and there's a survivor by the name of Max Rokitansky, a former policeman, and he's haunted by the memories of people he couldn't protect, his family, his kids, whatever it is. He's imprisoned as he's snatched away from his car by, of course, the warriors of course, in this world, Immortan Joe's army. And from here, he becomes a blood bag to a character by the name of Nux, and through him being involved in this, he is then in the middle of a hunt after, of course, Imperator Furiosa, who has stolen away with, of course, the war rig and, of course, the fuel. And in between that, too, many of the brides, of course, of the warlord Immortan Joe. From here, the story is simple. It's simply the Immortan Joe himself and his army chasing, of course, these people across the desert and trying to snatch back his property. But, of course, they're trying to get away because the character, of course, played by Charlize Theron, Furiosa, is trying to get home to the green place of many mothers where she came from. And with her is the ladies, of course, Immortan Joe's brides in tow. And between that, Max as well, who's now joined them on this journey. But, of course, Max then realizes that they want to go to a place that doesn't exist anymore, as the world has fallen away. So they realize the best place to go is the Citadel. So they turn around and go back. And that's the story in a nutshell, folks.
Yeah. To be honest with you, the story of Fury Road is a very basic story. Mm-hmm. And it's a basic execution. Again, as I talked about earlier, Mad Max is basically a supporting character in his titled film. And that's always kind of been the case with the Mad Max franchise.
Mm-hmm. Even back to the first one, yeah.
Yeah. But I think even more so than any of the other films within this series, it worked so well because, one, they pushed the envelope with the stunts, with the driving, and the visuals. And the visuals, this movie is one of the best shot movies and cinematography films of all time. And just the visuals it gives, the uniqueness of it. And then you throw in the absolutely phenomenal performance by Charlize Theron in this. I think it's all these elements coming together and just make Fury Road what it was, which was one of these standout movies of the last decade. And I think the other aspect you have of it too is it caught everybody so much by surprise. And it was word of mouth, and it just kept growing and growing and growing and growing, because you had the diehards go, and then that was like everybody started realizing there was something more to this movie than what we thought. And it exploded from there. I do have one question I've been wanting to ask you.
Yep.
Obviously, Mel Gibson, the big ghost that was kind of hanging over this film before it came out. He's had his troubles. He's had everything. If Mel Gibson were to have come back as Mad Max, would this movie have succeeded? Because I question at that time if Mel Gibson would have been drawn enough. What's that?
In 2015, when it came out.
In 2015.
I think it would have hurt the film. Yeah. I mean, because just the nature of what people react to it, I guess. You know?
Because I think also, too, the casting of Tom Hardy, who is probably maybe at one of his near apexes. He'd done Bane. People were talking about him. He was kind of everywhere at that point. And because Tom Hardy is such an actor that his presence alone just stands out, and he was able to kind of work off his presence to really kind of be there, but still let Charlize carry the film and be what she is, because Charlize Theron is one of the best actresses in the world today. But that was always something I've in my thought process. I'm like, this movie does not work if Mel Gibson returns as Mad Max.
Plus, Mel Gibson is a different actor.
Yeah.
Than he was when he, you know, 85 was the last time he played the character. And yet he's not playing, it is a character that's a window into the world. Now, it's a different for Ronan like that because, you know, other characters that have, in that same bolt, whether it's samurai or a Western, whatever it is. Yeah, you can do that. But the closest he's done that is probably Payback, maybe more recently, which is late 90s or whatever it was, right? But, you know, he's a different actor than he was. You know, he became a lead, like a full-on lead in Hollywood with Lethal Weapon and all those other movies, became a director, obviously Braveheart, one of the best movies ever made, without a doubt. And so, you know, he's a different person. Would he take a backseat to somebody like Charlize Theron? It's pretty much her movie. I mean, let's face it, let's be honest, folks. This is about Furiosa. It's Fury Road. You know, it's the road of the Furiosa. So, to me, you know, putting Mel in there, no, I think they made the right decision in getting something different to do it. Now, Tom, as Mad Max, was never one I would have put in there as Mad Max, but I still think he does a subdued but powerful performance because he's not using a lot of voice. He knows he's got to do it more along the lines of Road Warrior. It has to be like Road Warrior. That's what he's done. He's got minimal lines. It's all face. It's all body emotion. He's got to keep it tight and contorted. And then he's got to do that sort of Philip Marlowe impression of him talking of, and now the footwell fell away. Oh, look at this. And where am I? Like, all that sort of stuff. He's got to do that VO, the voiceover with it too. So he is your window into this world, but it's a very desperate, survival sort of packed character that is down further than it ever has been.
I think one of the other things too with this film, Adam, is that, and I think it's so memorable, is this film is so bright and it's so vivid with its, because most of it's filmed mostly during the daytime. And then the colors, even though we're in this wasteland, the colors of this movie and the template being played off the desert just pops. And I think, you know, it just makes all the visuals in this film just stand out so immensely. There wasn't a lot of night time. There's a little bit, but not a lot. And just to have that visual of all these vehicles on this open desert and just the effect of it. I think ultimately this is why I think this movie succeeded so well. To me, a high quality movie completely takes you out of everything around you. You get lost in it. You get lost into the world of it. And I think, you know, when I look back and do rewatches of the original Mad Max films, Road Warrior kind of does it at times. There's points in Road Warrior, but Road Warrior never fully brings you in. You're kind of in and out, I think, just because of the nature of it being an 80s film and how it was made. Fury Road, you from your opening of this movie till the end, you are so in awe of what you're seeing on your screen that you are so pulled into this world and you just forget everything that's going on around you.
And this is where I kind of disagree with George Miller. His version of the movie is Black and Chrome, which is the edition which came out about 2 years later after the film came out. He's always wanted to do a black and white version of Mad Max. He had Road Warrior with a print of black and white, and he said it was like looking at a whole other world. Well, Fury Road needs color, I'm going to say it, because of those beautiful visuals we saw. Watching it black and chrome is certainly a great experience, but it suffers from the lack of color. Because all that red, all that brown, all that the sky soaked with sand is the way you could kind of describe it. It's otherworldly already, and it kind of needed that too. But with that, folks, let's look at the cast. We've talked about a few of them. First up, Tom Hardy taking over the role that Mel Gibson made famous, Mad Max. Max Rockatansky certainly playing it like he's been out by himself without any form of socializing with people. He's been literally living like an animal in his car out in the wastelands, you know, the big interceptor out there. But I think his hero's journey in this is that he's becoming a human again by the end of it.
Yeah, he's dealing with what his issues have been for the whole time. And, you know, that's always been kind of, I think, something that we've seen, especially in Road Warrior and Thunderdome, was Max kind of going off and losing himself in this world, and then there's always something kind of bringing him back. With Road Warriors helping these people, with Thunderdome it was helping those kids escape. But at the end, he's on his own, and he needs something to pull his humanity. But he gets lost in himself, and he needs something to pull him back into his own humanity. And I think in this case, it's obviously if you're helping. So trying to survive first and foremost, get out of the situation he's in, but then helping Furiosa the way he can in this film. And especially in this one, I really do feel it's just as much about him trying to survive as it is him trying to help.
I think so too. One of the interesting things too, I find in this movie is that, you know, it's a subdued performance, but you can see a lot in his eyes about what he's been through. You know, he doesn't trust anybody. And one of the things is he learns by the end of it that he can trust one person. That is, of course, Furiosa. And even she has trust problems, obviously, with him at the start. And we see that too, which brings us to Charlize Theron. This is pretty much her movie, folks. She does an amazing performance as the Imperator, pretty much the head of the army of this massive... you know, witness me, witness, obviously, the war boys and all that sort of stuff. Her running the war rig and, you know, getting out there and doing what she did. And, of course, the story of her character, you know, she's becoming going from being a soldier to, you know, a young woman again, really is the journey for her. But also, you know, a savior to these people.
Well, I think it's actually something very... That's actually ending up being similar between her and Max, is both of them trying to kind of find their own humanity again. I think Furiosa has it more, but she's so hardened by what she's been through and has lost so much faith. For her, it's regaining some faith in humanity. For Max, it's just finding his humanity. It's a theme that runs through this film. And, you know, obviously, too, when you add in the aspects of what Furiosa is trying to accomplish, which is a showing of her humanity, wanting to prevent these women and from becoming what she's become in a way, and saving them from the fate that's ahead of them. Plus, just, and then to get smacked with that reality that she gets faced with. And then having Max there, who's kind of seen everything, being kind of ending up being a little bit of a sounding board for Earth, is it's all very strategically placed and very well done. And it's one of those things to where you have the idea of the story in your head, in this case, in George's case, and he stuck to the story he wanted to tell. He didn't let people influence the story he wanted to tell. And I think that's very important. I'm going to go back to my comparisons to Andor, because it's the very same thing Tony Gilroy did. He's like, I'm not a huge Star Wars fan, but I respect it, but I'm here to tell the story I want to tell. And he didn't let people do that. And when you're a Tony Gilroy or George and you have that clout, you can afford to do that. But what I think is even more amazing is that you take this cult following set of movies, add Mad Max Fury Road, and it becomes this worldwide phenomenon, completely changing how everybody looks at this entire franchise.
Yeah, it has. And I think more people got into the fandom than ever, because it was a bigger hit than it ever has been. So with that too, folks, we've got Hugh Keyes Byrne coming in here playing Toe Cutter as in the original, and in this one playing, of course, Immortan Joe, the leader of this huge army and, of course, leader of the Citadel. So he's seen as a god by the people that live around the crumbs and the stones, the pebbles of this huge Citadel. And so, you know, we see at the start, obviously, he owns all the water, the vegetation. Any vegetation is on the top of the Citadel. So he obviously has found some type of reservoir or something like that where he has a monopoly on everything there too. So I think it's an interesting character. It's a god. I mean, he's got the war boys who are practically half dead. You know, when they go out there too, they worship V8. Obviously, the you know, engines and cars and all that sort of stuff. And obviously, they're ready to die to be taken to Valhalla with, of course, Immortan himself. So there's a whole great thing about this is the world building that is done. And it's all thanks to, of course, the character of Immortan Joe, as we see it, as they're building up towards their chase of the heroes of this, is that we get to see what the war boys are about, the religion of the war boys. And I think it's, you know, he's taken a hint out of George Lucas's background, and that is, you know, tell the story on the run, pretty much just like Star Wars or even Terminator. James Cameron did the same thing, all the backstories told on the run by one of the characters, so you're learning about everything but while the story is still running, not by stopping. So exposition done on the run. I think that's done extremely well. Hugh Keyes Byrne, obviously known very well for Toe Cutter in the original, such an enigmatic villain, but also coming back to doing Farscape. He did a character on that as well. Grunchlik, I think it was the character was called. But also he was in Salute of the Jugger, better known as Blood of Heroes in the United States. And a few years ago, Blair Hiscock of My Saga and myself went to, of course, a screening of the original Mad Max, and they had Steve Bisley, who played Goose, the right-hand man, of course, to Mel Gibson, better known also for his role on Water Rats Out Here, which is a police show on the water, Water Rats. And, of course, we had Nathan Jones, Rictus Erectus, that was there too. And he still wasn't happy about my review of Star Trek Into Darkness, which he didn't like a few years ago, and unfriended me.
I want to call a quick time out here because I want to talk about Nathan Jones.
Okay, go for it.
Because Nathan Jones has a totally different approach because of his early career in the United States. And
oh yeah, wrestler.
He was a professional wrestler in WWE, given a huge push by Vince McMahon himself because he loved the look of Nathan Jones. However, there was a problem. Nathan Jones couldn't be a wrestler to save his life. He was horrible in the ring and hurt many a wrestler. And his career came to a pretty quick ending because he made the wrong professional wrestler really angry. And what wrestler would that be? The one, the only, the legend, The Undertaker.
Oh, okay. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, you do not make The Undertaker. You don't get on his crap list. And he managed to get on his crap list with very quickly. And so... Yeah, Nathan Jones, people kind of listen when they see him or hear that name. Wasn't that guy? And so, you know, and he doesn't have the greatest reputation as being one of the friendliest people around anyway. So, yeah, Nathan Jones, I mean, I'm happy he's found a career in acting and is doing things, but yeah, a very, very bizarre history for Nathan.
But I will say this, you know, getting back to Hugh Keyes-Byrne there, and some of the stories that man has, you know, he's been involved in so many, just huge. And, of course, we're going to be covering one of his other films, one of his first ones out here in Australia, Ozploitation classic called The Man from Hong Kong, which actually has James Bond as the bad guy and Sammo Hung doing a big fight on top of Ayers Rock, or Uluru as we call it, which you can't do anymore. There's no way they can do it now. And that was with obviously the captain in this, Max's captain. He goes, Maxi! That's right. We're talking about the captain from, of course, the original Mad Max is in it with, of course, Toe Cutter as police. Now, with that, we're going to head into, of course, Development Hell to Breakthrough. So the film had been around for basically... a long time. There was a stage where it was going to be a Mad Max film with Mel Gibson as far back as 87, as I was saying earlier. But also, you know, he had the idea of that chase all the way through. And it wasn't until 1998 where he started to really put pen to paper and get things out. And they storyboarded the entire film, which is, you know, something sometimes they do. But this time they really went to town. And so even... you know, Fox was going to be at one stage the place where they're going to shoot it in Australia with, of course, Mel Gibson back as Max Rokitansky. But after September 11 attacks, that was all put to bed. And then instead, George Miller did, of course, Happy Feet. And, of course, with Mel's, you know, going what he was happening in his private life, they decided to obviously let Mad Max be for a little while. And it wasn't until, of course, the early 2000s that it picked up again. And as late as 2009, they looked at starting to look at places like Broken Hill in Australia to shoot the film in 2010. And of course, there was a number of actors up for the role of Max at the time. Apart from Hardy, there was Armie Hammer, Jeremy Renner, Michael Fassbender, Joel Kinnaman, Heath Ledger, and of course, Eric Banner. And even, believe it or not, Eminem. Can you imagine Eminem as this
character? Actually, at least the look of him, I could see it, but... It's interesting because, one, I wonder how much Mel Gibson's breakout role in Lethal Weapon really caused delays for any Mad Max sequel, because he just exploded after that. And I think he felt like going back to Mad Max would almost be a step back at that point. And I'm sure he was getting advice from his agent not to do that. And then obviously he had his own problems, but there's always been some very interesting names tied with playing the Max character. But what I think is so interesting is you see these names, and I think there's a lot of people who don't understand that the Max character is not the star of his own films.
No, that's right. And 100%.
I think it took somebody unique like Tom Hardy, who really just doesn't give a rat's ass. Let's be honest here. He's just like, give me a role. I'm going to play it. You know, Hardy is just on a whole different world than the rest of us. Let's truly be honest about this. I love Tom Hardy. I think he's a phenomenal actor, but he's on another planet in another realm than the rest of us are living in. If you've seen his TV show Taboo, you know exactly what I'm talking about. But I think it took somebody like a Tom Hardy to come in and play that role. And what the biggest thing is too, Adam, when we talk about Tom Hardy in that role, he and Charlize Theron didn't exactly get along on set.
No, that was very clear that they did not get along whatsoever.
Yeah, but I mean, Mad Max was one of those films that you really thought it's never, you hear about it, it's never going to happen. And I think it took a studio willing to take a chance on it, and also the technology getting there so George could execute filming and the stunts that he wanted to do. And I just don't think for a long time the technology was there to do it.
God, 100%. Now, of course, the stunts in this movie on another level. I mean, we've got some very capable people. I believe Guy Norris on this movie. Even the founder of one of the martial arts I've done, of course, Zendo Kai, Richard Norton, playing one of the other imperators in this, as well as, obviously working on the stunts. Now, Richard Norton, is no slouch when it comes to stunt work. Obviously, he's done a lot of stuff over the years. And together, all of them have come up with something that's just incredible. I think they did an amazing job with that. And of course, the vehicles, the world of this, and particularly those huge poles that they had up, and stuntmen literally bouncing between the trucks, from side to side between the war rig and of course all the other vehicles. I mean, it's the pole cats, I believe they call them.
Yeah, those were. The truth of the matter is the fact that you did not hear about more injuries or something disastrous happening from this set too, because of just the insane practical stunts they were doing, not only with just the explosions and the action, but the driving. I mean, it was just insane. And like I said, that just tells you how tight George was running that set. And I mean, just mind blowing. I mean, I can't think of the last time I saw a chase film that this changed that genre.
100%. Now, we have some great action set pieces in this with those stunts. Obviously, the start, we have the Interceptor in a chase, which doesn't last very long, and it gets spun out and obviously does a tumble. And it's a kind of a catapult gag. It is really well done. With that, too, obviously, we have a chase sequence through the Citadel, too, where they're fixing all the cars up, and one of the scenes you can actually see the Interceptor team turned into what they call the Razor Cola, which is a stainless steel version of the car, pretty much stripped to the paint and put barbed wire all over it. That's great. It's an amazing sequence too, because we get to see also a gag where Tom Hardy's coming flying out one of the windows or the doors of the Citadel and just how high it is up in the air. From there, of course, then we have the chase scenes too. There's a lot of different parts, Kyle, in this, where we get to see people outside of, Gas Town, and obviously where they've got the bullet farm and all that sort of stuff, because they're the two main, obviously, places or cities in this universe, apart from the Citadel, right? So what is interesting is that we've got these people living out on the fringe, which are just waiting like vultures to jump on it, aren't they?
No, and that's true. This is the aspect too of the world that he built, which is even, I think, feels a little different than the world he built in the other Mad Max films. You have this desert, but you have this area, you have the Citadel with water flow that he controls, greenery, and everything else is just brown and dead, and you really don't see anything else around you. The interesting aspect of this is that the desert is a character upon itself, but your sets are your vehicles. So much happens within this chase and in the vehicles themselves. They are their own sets in this. And you see the way that these vehicles are designed. They're designed to be sets. And the design, he's designed these vehicles since where they can work within the stunts he had wanted to try and still give you this incredible mind-blowing visual.
100%. I mean, the war rig itself is a set. I think the only thing that I was disappointed about in this movie was the lack of use of the Interceptor. Just because I love the car so much, but that's not this story. This story is a chase, and they need something like the war rig to be able to really pull off the drama that they need in that too. And there's some great stuff like the Giga Horse, which is, of course, that double-decker car that we get to see, the off-road vehicle, we should say, monster truck tires, everything on it that, of course, Immortan Joe uses. That is the one car that I do believe, if we do get a sequel after this movie, which is, of course, not Furiosa, folks, because that's a sequel, right? A prequel. But The Wasteland was the other script. They wrote three scripts at the same time, Fury Road, Furiosa, and The Wasteland. The Wasteland was the sequel, and it was Max's story afterwards. And I do believe, from what I've seen around, you know, it will be about Max's, you know, early years, but also, and flashback, but also his, you know, post Fury Road days as well. I think that could be an interesting story if they do it like Godfather Part Two.
The thing I, to my understanding, and I could be wrong, but a lot of that Wasteland script ended up going into that Mad Max video game they made as well. Mm-hmm. So I don't know where we stand quite with that. I wonder if Tom Hardy is willing to come back as Mad Max at this point.
I reckon he would. I mean, the thing is, you know, it's something that was a big moment in his career. I mean, huge. I mean, he's had some big roles in franchises before, like Bane and stuff like that. But this is on another, and even Star Trek, I guess, too, played that clone of Picard. But this one's a little bit different, I think.
It's different. And I mean, I'm not saying he wouldn't come back, but I also look at what's happened with him since this movie came out, because he is the face of a major franchise in Hollywood right now. He is Venom.
Oh, Venom. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, very true.
And whether, you know what, say what you will about other Sony Spider-Man related movies, Venom, both films, I thoroughly enjoyed the first one. The second one left some things to be desired, but he's very beloved in that role, and they are filming Venom 3. They are going to make Venom 3 here, so it's going to be interesting to see his availability, and he's such a, his thought process, and he's just such a different cat. You don't know what he's going to decide and what direction he's going to go in. Is he willing to come back to play Max again, but this time being more of the center of attention? Because I know that was kind of a little bit of the issue there, was that he thought he would have a little bit more screen time and be a little more of the focus than what Charlize was. Plus, I think the two of them just had some very different, big differences in how they approached their method for acting. Yeah, and I think that was led to a lot of the conflict there. But it's going to be interesting to see what happens in the future. Obviously, I think a lot of it depends on what Furiosa does. I think Furiosa, this is why I say we need to pump the brakes on Furiosa, because I think Furiosa is going to be very good. I don't know if it's going to hit that Fury Road level. That's the biggest question. This is a tough world to revisit, because it's a very depressing world. Let's be honest.
But it's fun.
As a society ourselves, we've been through a lot of depressing crap over the last several years. So I'll be very curious. I mean, I look at what the two films that have kind of dominated the box office since we've come back from kind of getting back in the movies. And you had Top Gun Maverick, which hit the nostalgia and hit all this fun energy. And then Avatar, which is something we hadn't seen in 20 years. And just getting lost in a James Cameron world for a lot of people is something very magical. So I think with Furiosa, we're going to have to pay very close attention to how certain movies do over the next several months in 2023 before we get a really good feeling if people are ready to embrace something like Furiosa and Mad Max again.
I think so too. But with Fury Road, of course, we have to give it our rating. Of course, here on the Hallenbeck scale, 1 out of 5. So your finger scale, just like in the last Boy Scout, folks. Well, there's only one answer, and it's 5.
Yeah, this is easy. Mad Max Fury Road is a near perfect film. There's a couple of flaws here and there, but it's definitely one of those ones that you would put in, I'm going to say, like the top 20 films of all time. And it gets harder and harder because we have so many more films coming out and just the way things are. But yeah, Mad Max, I would put in there as one of those near perfect films. It's a 5 out of 5. It's one of those kind of movies, if you want to share a movie experience, give somebody a different kind of movie experience, if it's not normally their kind of movie, say, watch this, give it a chance. And you will, most people will come out of it go, that's normally not my type of movie, but I love that.
It really is. Folks, it is a hell of a night at the movies. If you've got a projector, chuck it up on the screen. Watch it at drive-in if you ever get a chance to. It is one of those ones that you just need to experience. So with that, folks, of course, that brings us to the end of the show. And I want to thank, of course, Cole for being on and giving us a bit of his time and his thoughts on the best movie ever made. And, of course, no doubt he's waiting for more Mad Max down the future.
Adam's getting spicy.
He is. Oh, spice.
No, I just want to say again real quick, it's always a pleasure to be on the show. Thank you for having me. Of course, too, you can find everything The Lethal Mullet on Phantom Podcast Network. But like I said at the beginning of the show, subscribe to the Lethal Mullet channel. There is so much great exclusive content on here. We're so happy to have it as part of the family of the Phantom Podcast Network. But subscribe to this channel because there's a lot of exclusive content. Adam's got some big plans for 2023. Give it the like. Tell your friends. Share it out. Just don't take his wives. He gets really upset when you do that. It's things are exploding on the Lethal Mullet.
And folks, get on TeePublic or Redbubble and get yourselves a Lethal Mullet t-shirt, or get a mug, or get a bedspread, or get curtains, or get whatever you want, folks. It's on there. Pillowcase, laptop case, phone case. Who knows? You could get, look, you could get one of these, a phone case. It's a Lethal Mullet phone case.
Thank you for listening. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. Here are the other great shows on the Fandom Podcast Network. Culture Clash, where we discuss the latest in entertainment and pop culture. Blood of Kings, our show covering the entire Highlander universe. Couch Potato Theater, we celebrate our favorite movies. And Time Warp, our fandom flashback show discussing a year in movies and our favorite retro movie, TV, and pop culture topics. Good Evening, discussing all things Alfred Hitchcock. Hair Metal Podcast, we cover the rock metal music of the 80s and early 90s. Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, discussing the time-traveling Doctor Who universe. Lethal Mullet, an action film podcast, covering the 80s, 90s, and beyond. Also, check out the Lethal Mullet Network for more great podcasts. What a Piece of Junk, our Star Wars podcast. Making Treks, a Star Trek podcast, with a deep dive into the final frontier. The Fandom Show, our Fandom Podcast Network live YouTube show discussing the hottest topics in fandom. The True Believers MCU Podcast, discussing the Marvel Cinematic and Television Universe. Union Federation, our Star Trek and the Orville show. And we're proud to welcome the BQN Network to the Fandom Podcast Network. Please visit our friends on the BQN Network, a Star Trek Universe podcast that also includes your favorite topics, movies, history, superheroes, and more. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on YouTube. The Fandom Podcast Network is also on all major podcast platforms. The Fandom Podcast Network audio master feed is on Podbean at fpnet.podbean.com. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can email us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening, and remember, respect others and enjoy your fandom.